41. And another one. Gerasimovich and his wife kissed. He was short, but his wife was no taller. They had been lucky with their guard, a decent, easy-going young fellow who didn't in the least mind their kissing. Indeed, it embarrassed him to have to intrude on them. Had it been possible, he would have turned away and looked at the wall for half an hour. But Lieutenant Colonel Klementyev had given orders that the doors of all 7 interrogation compartments should be left open, so that he could keep watch on the guards from the hallway. Not that he himself minded these people kissing. He knew that no state secret could leak as a result. But he was wary of his own guards and prisoners. There were informers among them who might drip on Klementyev himself. Husband and wife kissed. But it was not like the kisses that had thrilled them when they were young. This kiss, in defiance of fate and authority, was a kiss without colour, taste, or odour, the pale kiss a ghost might bestow in a dream. They sat down, separated by an interrogation table with a warped plywood top. That clumsy little table had more of a history behind it than many a human life contains. Generations of prisoners, men and women, had sat there sobbing, numb with fear, fighting against murderous sleeplessness, some still proudly defiant, some signing trivial denunciations of family and friends. They were not usually allowed to handle pencils or pens, except for the few required to make depositions in their own handwriting. Those few had contrived to leave their marks, those peculiar absent-minded scribbles and scratches that mysteriously preserve the tortuous workings of the unconscious. Looking at his wife, Gerasimovich thought how unattractive she had become. There were deep hollows under her eyes, wrinkles around her eyes and mouth. Her skin was slack. Natasha had obviously stopped caring about it. Her coat was pre-war and should at least have been turned long ago. Its fur collar had molted. That headscarf was from time immemorial, bought, he seemed to remember, with coupons in Komsomolsk on Amur, long ago, and worn by Natasha in Leningrad when she went to get water from the Neva. But Gerasimovich suppressed the base thought that his wife was ugly. The woman before him was the only woman in the world for him, half of himself. He was looking at the woman with whom all his memories were entwined. However fresh and pretty a young girl might be, she could not overshadow Natasha. Her memories would be too shallow, her experience too superficial. When they first met at a house in Srednya Podyacheskaya Street, by the Lion Bridge, Natasha was not yet 18. It was a New Year's party, 1930, 25 years ago, in 6 days' time. Looking back, you could see clearly what 1919 and 1930 had done to Russia. But every new year, as it arrives, is seen in rosy colours. You cannot know what associations that date will acquire in the people's memory. As always, they had believed in 1930. But that was the year when Gerasimovich was arrested for the first time, as a wrecker. Ilarion Pavlovich had begun work just as the word engineer was becoming synonymous with enemy, and when proletarian pride demanded that every engineer be suspected as a wrecker. To make it worse, the young Gerasimovich's upbringing compelled him always to bow courteously and say, "Excuse me, please," in a very gentle voice, to the right people and to the wrong people. At meetings he lost his voice and sat quiet as a mouse. He had no idea how irritating people found him. But though the case against him was concocted with great skill, it would not stretch to more than 5 years. When he got to the Amur, he was immediately excused from close confinement, and his sweetheart joined him and became his wife. There were not many nights when husband and wife did not dream of Leningrad. The day came when they were due to return, but it was 1935, and they were swept back by the tidal wave of arrests after Kirov's assassination. Natalia Pavlovna was scrutinizing her husband just as closely. She had once watched the changes in his face, the hardening of his mouth, the cold and at times fierce glint through his pince-nez. Ilarion had stopped bowing, stopped constantly apologizing. His past was always held against him. He was dismissed from job after job or employed on work below his qualifications, and they had travelled from place to place, always hard up. They had lost a daughter, lost a son. In the end, in desperation, they had risked going back to Leningrad. As it happened in June 1941. In Leningrad they had even less chance of a tolerable existence. Her husband's record dogged him everywhere. But these experiences, instead of weakening the laboratory wraith, toughened him. He survived an autumn of trench digging. When the first snow fell, he became a grave digger. In the besieged city, no profession was more essential or more remunerative. Survivors paid their last respects to the departed by giving away their beggarly cubic centimeter of bread. Who could eat that bread without shuddering? Hilarion's justification was that our fellow citizens showed us no pity. We'll show them none. The couple came through their ordeal, only for Hilarion to be arrested again before the siege ended, this time for intending to betray his homeland. Many arrests were made in Leningrad for treasonable intent. People who hadn't been in occupied territory could not be accused of actual collaboration. But if someone like Gerasimovich, a former convict, had come to Leningrad at the outbreak of war, it was obviously with the intention of joining the Germans. They would have arrested his wife as well, but she was dangerously ill at the time. Natalia Pavlovna scrutinized her husband and, strangely, found that the years of suffering had left no deep mark on him. The gaze behind his gleaming pince-nez was as intelligent and steady as ever. His cheeks were not sunken, there were no wrinkles. He was wearing an expensive suit and a carefully knotted tie. Anyone might think that she, not he, was the jailbird. Her first unkind thought was that he was having a fine old time in the special prison. He was obviously not bullied. He was working in his own field. His wife's suffering meant nothing to him. But she stifled this spiteful thought and asked in a weak voice, "How are you getting on there?" As if she had waited 12 months for this visit, spent 360 nights thinking of her husband on her chilly widow's couch, just to ask, "How are you getting on?" And Gerasimovich, holding tight inside his narrow, constricted breast a whole life that had cramped and stunted his mental powers, a whole world as a prisoner in the taiga and the desert, in solitary confinement in between interrogations, and now in the comfort of a special prison, answered, "All right." They had been given only half an hour. The sands were trickling away in an unstemmable stream down the glass throat of time. Dozens of questions, wishes, complaints struggled to be heard first. But all Natalia Pavlovna managed to ask was, "When did you hear about the visit?"
"The day before yesterday."
"And you?"
"On Tuesday.
The Lieutenant Colonel has just asked me whether I'm your sister."
"Because of your patronymic?"
"Yes." When they were engaged and on the Amour, everyone had taken them for brother and sister. There was between them the sort of external and internal resemblance that makes husband and wife more than just a married couple.
"How are things at work?"
Hilarion Pavlovich asked. She started.
"Why do you ask? Have you heard?"
"Heard what?" He knew something, but didn't know if she had the same thing in mind. He knew that prisoners' wives were always given a hard time outside. But how could he know that she had been dismissed from her post the previous Wednesday because of her connection with him? She had already been told that she could visit him, and had not immediately started looking for a new job. She was waiting until she saw him, as though a miracle might happen, and their meeting might illuminate her life and show her what to do. But how could he give her any practical advice, when he had spent so many years in prison and was unskilled in the ways of the world outside? What she must decide was whether or not to renounce him. Visiting time was running out in that drab, inadequately heated room, dimly lit through a barred window, and her hope of a miracle was ebbing with it. Natalia Pavlovna realized that she could not convey her loneliness and her suffering to her husband in that miserly half hour, that he ran on rails of his own, lived a life as regular as clockwork, and would understand nothing. It would be better not to upset him. The guard moved away to study the plaster on the wall.
"Tell me about yourself. Please, tell me."
Ilarion Pavlovich held his wife's hand across the table, and his eyes were warm with affection for her, as they always had been in the most grueling months of the siege.
Larrick, are you likely to get any remission?
She had in mind the system at the camp on the Amur, where they credited you with 2 days served for every day worked, so that your sentence ended before the appointed date. Ilarion shook his head.
How could I? They've never given remission here, you know that. Invent something important, and they may let you out ahead of time. But the thing is,
he glanced at the guard, whose eyes were elsewhere,
the thing is that the inventions here are of a very dubious kind.
He dared not put it any more clearly. He took his wife's hands and brushed his cheek against them. Yes. In ice-bound Leningrad, he had not scrupled to take as a burial fee the bread ration of someone who would need burying himself the day after. But now, he couldn't bring himself.
Is it miserable for you by yourself? Are you very miserable?
He asked tenderly, rubbing his cheek against her hand.
Miserable?
Right then she was horrified. The visit was slipping away. It would soon be broken off. And she would go out to the Leofortova rampart, none the richer for it. Go out into the joyless streets, alone.
Alone. Alone. The stultifying aimlessness of every day she lived, everything she did.
There was neither sweet, nor hot, nor bitter. Her life was like dingy cotton wool. He stroked her hand.
Natalia, my love. If you reckon up my 2 terms, and think how long it's been already, there's not much left now. Only 3 years. Only 3. Only 3.
She interrupted indignantly. She felt her voice trembling, felt that she was no longer in control of it.
Only 3. For you, it's only. For you, quick release would entail something objectionable. You live among friends. You're doing the work you enjoy most. You don't have to be smuggled into somebody else's room. But I've been sacked. I've got nothing to live on. Nobody will take me on. I can't go on. I no longer have the strength. I can't stand another month of it. Not a single month. I will be better off dead. The neighbours shove me around just as they like. They've thrown my clothes chest out. They've pulled my shelf off the wall. They know I dare not say a word. That they could get me expelled from Moscow. I've stopped going to see my sisters and Aunt Zhenya. They all jeer at me and call me the biggest fool on earth. They keep at me to divorce you and marry somebody else. When will it end? Look what I've turned into. I'm 37. In 3 years I will be an old woman. I go home and I don't eat, don't tidy my room. I loathe it. I just collapse on the sofa and lie there exhausted. Larrick, my dear, do whatever it takes to get out earlier. You're a genius. Invent something for them so that they'll leave you in peace. I know you've got something for them right now. Save me. Save me.
She had not meant to say all this, grief-stricken as she was. Shaking with sobs and kissing her husband's small hand, she lowered her head onto the warped and splintery table that had seen many such tears.
"Pull yourself together, citizeness, please,"
the guard said guiltily, glancing at the open door. Gerasimovich's face was frozen in a grimace beneath his gleaming pince-nez. The unseemly noise of her sobbing could be heard in the hallway. The lieutenant colonel loomed menacingly in the doorway, looked witheringly at the woman's back, and closed the door himself. The regulations did not specifically forbid tears. They implicitly assumed that tears could not occur.